Please be seated. All right, we have the second argument of Division 7's session today. This is People versus Chiefs. I see counsel are present. I want to ask the same question of counsel for this argument that I did of the first. Are you familiar with our procedures, or if not, do you have any questions? All right, thank you. We shall proceed with oral argument. The appellant may go ahead.
May it please the court, my name is Don Solier and I represent the defendant, Mr. Calvin Cheeks. I'd like to start by discussing some of the uncontroverted facts that I think are dispositive of the Fourth Amendment issues in this case, and then discuss why the inevitable discovery rule does not apply. In this case, police entered the defendant's residence knowing that the search warrant was overly broad. They had a search warrant that authorized the search of 3040 South Academy Boulevard. And that search warrant directed them to an entrance described in the search warrant as a glass door on the west side with the numbers 3040 over that door. Now, Detective Chagnon apparently went to that location, discovered that it wasn't the Cheeks' residence, and apparently spoke with building management on the east side, located on the east side of the building in a pawn shop. And building management, they guided Detective Chagnon to the Cheeks' residence, not the search warrant, but building management guided the police to the residence. And that residence was a wooden door on the south side, not a glass door on the west side. So in the hearing on the motion to suppress, Detective Chagnon admitted that he knew at the time he entered, he knew that his search warrant was overly broad. He had a search warrant for 3040, for the entrance on the west side, not for the wooden door on the south side.
Pardon me for interrupting. And is it Mr. Soulier? Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Soulier, but before the police go through that wooden door, they know that the defendant has told them his address is 3040. And they have gone to that building and seen that there is a 3040 on this street, and their warrant says 3040. Now, I understand what you're saying about the door, the description of the door being different, but until they enter the wooden door and see the piece of mail and the number, the 3044, which is covered up by plywood from the exterior, what else could they have done to determine what the proper address of that was?
Well, several things. First of all, before they entered the wooden door, they knew from building management, or at least it was their understanding from building management, that entire property was designated 3040. So they knew their warrant was overly broad. They could have checked casino records. The casino records apparently contained the address 3044. That's clear from the fact that once they entered, they found a mailer inside the door addressed to Mr. Cheeks at 3044 South Academy Boulevard. So they had access to the casino records. In the affidavit that is submitted with that first search warrant, it indicates that that the resident's address on a Colorado Springs Police Department booking photo for Calvin Carl Cheeks, date of birth 2462, later matched to the home address given by Calvin Cheeks to Womack's Casino in his application for a player's card.
All this argument is premised on the fact that they had to disbelieve your client who said he lived at 3040.
But it's their obligation to do a diligent investigation. That would be tantamount to relying on, essentially what they're doing is relying on a suspect in custody who is not admitting or confessing to this crime. He's denying it. And denials are not considered reliable.
No, I'm not talking about denials. I'm saying, where do you live? He said 3040.
Well, to some extent, that's true. If building management is correct in that the entire property is 3040.
So your argument, as I understand, is not so much on the numerical 3040 versus 44. It's on the overbreadth. It's not particular because 3040, arguably, is the entire property, including the pawn shop. Is that your argument?
It's both. It's overly broad, and it's a wrong address. Really, it's a wrong. I think there's no difference between a wrong address and a wrong location. That warrant described the location of a glass door on the west side with the numbers 3040 over it, based on a very cursory observation of the property. A more thorough investigation may have revealed that the numbers 3040 that were scratched into a mailbox that Mr. Cheeks was using outside of his wooden door.
Which way does that cut, though, Mr. Soulier? You've got 3040 on the street side, 3040 on this metal mailbox. We've got the picture of it. Doesn't that suggest that the police at that point, it's 3040. It's a big building. There are a variety of things here, but it's 3040.
Well,
why isn't this Maryland versus Garrison?
It is Maryland versus Garrison, Judge. And
you don't want it to be Maryland versus Garrison.
Well, under Maryland versus Garrison, the rule of law that's set out in there favors Mr. Cheeks. In that case, the court found that police had relied in good faith on the warrant as issued. In that case, police had a diligent investigation. They did not rely on a suspect telling them what his address was, a suspect in custody who was denying the accusations being made against him. They relied on a confidential informant, a reliable confidential informant, and then they corroborated that by doing a check of the utility records and a visual inspection of the property. And they took several steps they conducted a reasonable investigation, which allowed them to reasonably rely on the warrant, even though their warrant was overly broad. In this case, we don't have that. In this case, we have something quite a bit different. We have reliance entirely on the word of a suspect who is under the spotlight of interrogation and who is, we know, when suspects are denying, we don't give credit to denials, we give credit to admissions. So this number 3040 comes out in the context of a denial.
Mr. Soulier, let me ask you this then. We're talking about the number 3040, and what I'm understanding, you're arguing two different arguments. One is that there's a wrong address between 3040 and 3044, and then there's another argument that this warrant is overly broad. So can you explain your argument that it is overly broad?
Well, to the extent that 3040 describes the entire building, this multi-unit structure, probable cause is limited to the Cheeks property, which is just one subunit in that multi-unit complex described as 3040. It's also a wrong address in that really an address is a location. This warrant describes a location, the glass door on the west side with the numbers 3040 over it. That in the step that, in order to confirm the information that the defendant provided to the police, they simply sent out a patrol officer who didn't really confirm that 3040 was the Cheeks residence. All that police officer did was confirm the existence of a 3040, but that did nothing at all to corroborate that this was Mr. Cheek's residence. That sort of investigation poses a substantial risk of harm to the public. There's a substantial possibility of error if you rely essentially entirely on the word of a suspect who is not confessing, who's not admitting, who's not contrite, but someone who is denying responsibility, and suspects often try to shift the blame. So it's not reasonable to rely on what a suspect in custody is saying, especially if they're denying. It appears that they had other information available to them at their fingertips. Cholera, that statement in the affidavit, in the first affidavit, that the booking photo address for Mr. Cheeks matched the Womack Casino address is evidence of deception and an effort to mislead the magistrate who issued this warrant into thinking that that 3040 address was corroborated by other objective records. Note that when that statement is given in the affidavit, Detective Shagnon does not indicate what the actual address is in that Colorado Springs Police Department booking photo, or what the actual address is in the Womack player's card application.
So, let me ask you this, and I may move on to the second point you were going to address. And you talked about inevitable discovery, and that's what the trial court found. It may actually be independent source, but whatever it's called, if the second warrant had been the only warrant issued here, would you have any particularity challenge? Or, putting aside, I understand you think it's tainted by the first warrant, but if the second warrant was the only one issued, would that not be a good enough warrant?
I don't think so.
Why?
And Detective Shagnon tells us why. He indicates in the hearing on the motion to suppress that warrant, too, is overly broad, that it doesn't specify the Cheeks subunit.
But it's 3044. There's no evidence in the record there's anything other than a 3044 that belongs to Mr. Cheeks, is there? I mean, 3044,
no,
if it exists, is only Cheeks' residence.
If that were the only warrant that was issued, or if that warrant had been issued before the search became tainted by the entry, then my position here would be much weaker today. I think it still has problems in that it doesn't, the face of the warrant, the application page does not specifically designate the Cheeks address as a wooden, I don't think it indicates a wooden door on the south side. It talks about 3044, but if police were executing that warrant, I'm not sure they'd be able to find 3044 without a greater description. And without seeking information outside of the warrant, speaking with building property management. So they entered knowing that they did not have permission to enter. The independent inevitable discovery rule simply doesn't apply because the people need to show that there was a separate line of investigation proceeding and destined to lead to the tainted evidence at the time the initial illegality occurred. And here the illegality occurred when they entered that wooden door, knowing that their warrant was too broad. And they should have known from the fact that the streets, page 25 of the hearing on the motion to suppress, Detective Anderson talks about how the businesses on the north side of the building are individually numbered. So they're outside the building. They can see these various individually numbered units. They could reasonably infer that Mr. Cheeks also had a number to his unit, even though it wasn't posted on the outside. So if there are no other questions, I'll reserve the time I have remaining.
You have about a minute 30.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Katherine Hansen, Senior Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the people in this matter. My registration number is 25464. Your Honors, it appears as if the defendant is making two challenges to the search warrant. One is that it's insufficient because it didn't particularly describe the proper address, and the other is that it is too broad. It describes an address, but that address covers multiple subunits, and so therefore was unnecessarily broad. I would like to address both of those in turn. First, I think it's important when we're looking at the first question of whether the warrant particularly describes the place to be searched. It's important to remember that the purpose of this requirement is to prevent general and exploratory searches. And so when we're deciding whether the affidavit or the warrant adequately describes the place to be searched, what we want to look at is whether an officer can with reasonable effort ascertain the identity of the location to be searched, and whether there's a reasonable probability that another place might be mistakenly searched. And I think if you look at the information that's in the first warrant and the warrant affidavit, because Mays tells us we can look at information in the affidavit as well, I think that the information adequately described the place to be searched. First, you have the defendant's statement that he lived at 340. He did not specify a specific subunit. He didn't describe that this building was divided by subunits, and he actually even described his residence as a large warehouse where he stores his cars as well. He described his residence at 340 South Academy as a commercial type building. And so his own description of his residence was this building at 340.
Pardon me for interrupting, Ms. Hansen, but your opponent says that there is no reason to believe the defendant, that he was simply providing information here and denying his own responsibility, and thus his statement has no weight. Do you agree with that?
I don't, Your Honor. Basically, the defendant, there was no reason at that point for him to, for the officers to believe he wasn't being truthful about his residence. He described it, I believe, in the testimony. Detective Anderson indicated he verified several times with the defendant that this was his residence. The defendant described it. There was no reason for the officers to believe him, and I think there, for the warrant to issue, there needed to just simply be probable cause to believe that there were items to be found in that location. And so certainly I think the defendant's statements, the fact that the officer went and verified there was indeed a commercial building at 340 South Academy, verified the defendant's cars that he had described, verified the defendant's cars were in that parking lot. I think you look at all the information together, and there's absolutely no reason for the officers to have believed he wasn't being truthful about where he lived.
Well, Ms. Hansen, let me ask you another question. Did the officers have any information available to them before executing the warrant that Mr. Cheek's residence would have been a subunit within the larger building?
I don't believe so. Basically, what we have is the officers observed the building. There did not appear to be any open doors, any open windows, everything pretty much on two of the four sides of the building were boarded up except for the defendant's door, which had the mailbox outside with 3040 on it. Clearly, the defendant did not claim to have been residing in the pawn shop or the other businesses on the north side of the building. So when you look at what was left of that building, it didn't appear to be subdivided at all. In fact, the building manager, who I believe the Detective Chagnon spoke to before, and I believe that the evidence is sufficient to show he actually spoke to this person, the building manager, before he applied for the warrant. I think that's indicated in the affidavit and also in the testimony. So basically, the building manager specifically said that 3040 is the address for the entire building, but not only that, he specifically told the detective that it was not sublet.
So in answer to Judge Lichtenstein's question, though, don't they know that 3040 includes premises, commercial premises maybe, other than the defendant's residence?
Yes, but I think the question is that whether it's sublet into separate residences.
Well, 3040, if they say, give us a warrant to search 3040, isn't that overbroad? Because they don't have probable cause to search all of 3040. They have probable cause to search one particular part of 3040.
Well, I think that, and that goes to the second issue, is whether when they went to the building and entered, whether they knew that the warrant was overbroad, whether they knew it was broken down into separate subunits. And I think in this case, a reasonable interpretation of this warrant is not that they were authorizing a search of the businesses. In the affidavit itself, it specifically says that they are seeking to enter the premises, the residence of Mr. Cheeks.
I'm missing that part of it. In the affidavit.
In the affidavit.
And the warrant doesn't say that.
No, but in the Mays case, the officers entered the Mays basement apartment, and there the warrant was overbroad, and they did not know it. This is the Lucero exception to the Avery
right.
rule. Basically, they had it in the affidavit that they were searching the Mays apartment. And the court found specifically that the fact that that was not in that warrant was not a problem. It was in the affidavit, and so therefore, it particularly described.
Are you familiar with the U.S. Supreme Court's later case in Grove versus Ramirez?
Yes.
And I think the Supreme Court, and that's after Mays. Mays was early 70s. I think that's 1983 case, or 03 even.
Mm-hmm.
I think the court said particularity cannot be substituted for by the affidavit. And that was items to be seized, but as rather than place to be searched, for the same particularity requirement, didn't they?
Well, I do believe they said that. I do believe they indicated, though, that when the warrant, there are certain situations where the warrant incorporates the affidavit, or when they're provided together, that those together can provide sufficient information.
And did this warrant incorporate the affidavit?
It certainly is attached.
An incorporate attachment B for things to be seized, but I don't see it incorporate anything in terms of place to be searched.
Okay, I would have to look through this. I don't recall.
Okay. That would be the requirement, that it would have to expressly reference it, wouldn't it?
Well, I believe that that was one of the ways it can be incorporated. So I believe, I don't know that necessarily in GROW they said that is the only way that absolutely it has to be specifically incorporated by reference. Clearly these documents, I believe, were provided together. They were signed, were provided to the judge together.
Yep.
So I believe it was sufficient. And like I said, when we're talking about particularity, I would like to mention that even if you look just on the face of the warrant, even if you don't consider the warrant describes 3040 as a commercial use building. The defendant told them that he lived at 3040, which is a commercial use building. They went to 3040, a commercial use building. They found what appeared to be the only entrance to anything other than a business. And they went into that residence. And at that point, they had no reason to believe that the building was subdivided in terms of anything other than the businesses. And so I think in this situation, clearly, if you look at the warrant itself, the officers had no reason to believe that there was anything other than the defendant's one single residence. And that's, in fact, what they found, the one single residence. I think that the finding of certain information listing 3044 is not particularly relevant here. I think what we have is two pieces of information that suggested that at some point in time, this particular location, which as far as we know was everything but those businesses, that this particular location was designated 3044. We certainly don't have any reason to believe that it was designated 3044 at that time. The defendant said 3040 was his address. He described his building, which was consistent with the entire area except for the businesses.
Ms. Hansen, let me just ask you, is there any significance to this in the affidavit that it was stated by Detective Chagnon that as detectives began the search, the number was observed over the front door of the residence, which is a subdivided building, and then when they spoke to building management indicated exactly which subdivided space is leased by Kelvin Cheeks?
Well, I think that that's a reference to the fact that it's subdivided with the businesses. You know, I wouldn't disagree that this building, clearly, assuming it's all 3040, that every single business has the address 3040, that it's a subdivided building. I think, though, when you're looking at this warrant and deciding whether to particularly describe the defendant's residence, you have to look at the fact that when they're talking about sublet, subdivided, when we're talking about where is the residence, there was only one residence there, and there was no way to mistake that residence for anything else there. There was no other doors with other addresses on them that were open. There's just nothing else to mistake it for. So I think when they're referring to a subdivided building, certainly it's subdivided because of the businesses. But in terms of the area that we're looking for, Mr. Cheek's residence, it was not subdivided. There's no evidence. And I think that that's how that statement has to be interpreted.
So Ms. Hansen, if I may, I'd like to ask you about the application of Maryland versus Garrison here. I mean, in Garrison, the police have no idea the place is subdivided before they go in, and then they find out, there are at least two apartments here, maybe more. Here, it appears that the police were aware that the building was subdivided before they went in. So doesn't that mean that Garrison doesn't apply?
Well, I think Garrison doesn't apply because there's no subdivision of the residence. I think that when they applied for this warrant for the defendant's residence at 3040, I think that that necessarily excluded the businesses. There's no indication, I mean, again, looking at this, whether a reasonable police officer with reasonable effort can decide and identify the place to be searched. There's no reason for the officers to have been confused whatsoever that he was not residing in the businesses. So when we're talking about 3040, the building being his residence, I think we're talking about it's not subdivided with regard to the residence. And so in that sense, unless you find that 3044 is somehow a separate address, a subdivided space, which I don't think there's any evidence that it was, Maryland versus Garrison doesn't apply at all because we had the officers going to a building that they were described and they went to the right place. So I think in a way Maryland versus Garrison doesn't apply at all, but for those reasons.
Ms. Hess, can I ask you a related to factual question? And part of the confusion I'm having is it seems you must have done a nice job on appeal that you somehow located a warrant that nobody had found before, at least the face of the warrant, didn't you? I mean, that was not in the trial court record. I don't see that the trial court ever had the opportunity to consider the face of either warrant, maybe.
I believe there was some confusion about what was in the record, and I believe defense counsel supplemented the record after with the face of the warrants.
And if that's the case, the argument, it seems to me, could not have been presented to the district court. Defense counsel now is arguing that it, and you say it specified they can enter a glass door on the west side, and he's saying, no, this was a plywood door on the south side, I think, and there's a confusion about what type of door and what geographic location it was in. None of that was resolved by the trial court because it wasn't before the trial court, isn't that right?
Well, I don't think it's clear that the court did not have the face of the warrant. I believe that there was some discussion, and I don't recall specifically, but I believe they did have all the documents. I'm just not sure if they were presented in the record on appeal when it first came up.
So the trial court did have it. So how do you respond then to the fact that it seems, and there's some of the pictures that I think may have been trial exhibits, it seems that if there were any glass, it was on top and it was obscured, and the patrol officer talked about looking through a glass door and seeing property inside, that defendant's residence doesn't appear that the patrol officer could have done that.
Well, first, I'd like to point out that when we talk about the glass door in the warrant itself, it doesn't specify that the glass door is the defendant's residence. It doesn't specify that it's the entry to his residence. It just is describing the building. It describes it as a two-story stucco building. It describes the location. It's on a corner. It's a multi-commercial. It says it's got a glass door on the west side with 3040 over it. That does not purport to say that this is the entrance to the defendant's residence.
Well, if that's the case, then it's not very particular. Then they can enter anywhere they want under the warrant.
I don't think a warrant requires specificity as to the method of entry.
No, but the place to be entered. And
Correct.
And if 3040 is the whole building, then they can enter. That's what I'm trying. Under this warrant, it seems to me, if you read it without the affidavit, but and maybe you can read the affidavit with it, but on the face of the warrant, it gives them the right to go into the pawn shop, it seems to me, and say, we're going to search your pawn shop for all these items.
Well, and I think that goes back to my argument that when interpreting the warrant itself, we have to decide whether an officer with reasonable efforts could possibly identify. And I think here, there's no indication whatsoever that the officers believed he lived in the businesses. And so with officers faced with this warrant, would not have to make reasonable, or would only have to make reasonable efforts to identify where to go in, because they testified only, this was the only door that provided any entrance into the building other than. So I don't know what this glass door was. I don't know. We don't know that the officer looked through it specifically. We know he saw things inside, but we don't know specifically that he looked through it. But the bottom line is that the officers were very clear, the defendant's wood door that did have the 3044 apparently that could only be visible from the side inside. This was the only entrance other than the businesses. And clearly, I think, again, the officers had no reason to believe it. It's just a reasonable interpretation of this description that he was not describing the building to include the businesses, where the defendant gave no indication that he lived therein. I see my time is almost up. If this court has no further questions, we would ask that this court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You've got about a minute 30, Mr. Sawyer.
Thank you. This warrant doesn't pass the Steele test. A reasonably competent officer following this warrant would go to the glass door on the west side with the numbers 3040 over it. That's not Cheeks' door.
What door is that? I'm not sure.
That's somebody else's property.
Is it a residence? Is it a business? What do we know about it?
We don't know. We don't really know what happened there. We know that when they entered the Cheeks apartment, that a SWAT team came in. And so we can imagine that the entry was a pretty ruckus one, pretty violent entry. This warrant posed that risk to that location. This is a wrong address warrant, a wrong location warrant.
But as a matter of fact, they had probable cause to search Cheeks' residence, and in fact, they searched Cheeks' residence and only Cheeks' residence.
But they did without permission. They had permission to enter 3040. They knew that their warrant, according to Chagnon, he knew it was too broad. He knew that the search was limited to a smaller area designated by 3044 and described by that wooden door on the south side. There's testimony that this 3040 glass door doesn't connect to Cheek's property. Take a look at pages 26 and 27 of the motion, testimony on the motion. Detective Anderson testifies that they did not enter into two separate locations. They entered from the outside. They entered 3044 from the outside. I think it'd be interesting to know what happened at 3040, but we don't have that. And I would disagree that the trial court had the application page of the search warrant at the time of the hearing. It appears that they did not, because had they had that, there would have been more testimony on that point about the glass door and versus the wooden door, west side versus south side.
Counsel, your time is up.
Thank you.
This concludes the argument in People versus Cheeks. Mr. Souliere and Ms. Hansen, on behalf of the court, I would like to thank you very much for being willing to come to Doherty High School here in Colorado Springs and to make your arguments today. We appreciate it very much, as I'm sure to all the people here watching the arguments today. With that being said, this concludes our oral arguments for this morning. The case will stand submitted, an opinion will issue in due course, and the bailiff will announce the recess.